हरिः ओ श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Text 48 Vyasadeva also perceived that this final goal of life is superior even to the experience of bliss in the impersonal supreme. The evidence for this is that he taught the Bhagavatam to Sukadeva, who was situated in that bliss of Brahman. In order to induce him to induce in him an appreciation for the special qualities of the bliss of love of God. This is stated in the verse beginning Sisamhitam. The phrase, after composing the Bhagavatam and revising it, shows that Vyasadeva first wrote the Bhagavatam in a condensed version, and then, later, by Narada's instructions, expanded it systematically. This reconciles two ideas, the one found in Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Bhagavatam appeared after the Mahabharata, and the other, mentioned elsewhere, that the Mahabharata appeared after all 18 Puranas. The confusion regarding the order of the Bhagavatam Mahabharata's appearance is due to supposedly conflicting information. On the one hand, the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, in the fourth chapter of the first canto, states that it came after. It also retells numerous pastimes from the Mahabharata. Right? Yeah. On the other hand, there's scriptural evidence which seems to state the opposite, that the Puranas, Bhagavat Purana included, were composed first. Astadasa Puranani Kritva Satyavati Sutta Chakre Bharatam Akhyanam Vedarter Upa Brindhitam. Having produced the 18 Puranas, the son of Satyavati then composed a narration of the Mahabharata, which is full with the teachings of the Vedas, Skanda Purana. Srila Prabhupada, following the conclusion expressed by Jiva Goswami in this Anucheda, settles the dispute. Amongst mundane scholars, there is some diversity of opinion as to the date of compilation of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is, however, certain from the text of the Bhagavatam that it was compiled before the appearance of King Parikshit and after the departure of Lord Krishna. When Maharaj Parikshit was ruling the world as the king of Bharatvarsha, he chastised the personality of Kali. According to revealed scriptures and astrological calculation, the age of Kali is in its 5,000th year. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled not less than 5,000 years ago. Mahabharata was compiled before Srimad Bhagavatam, and the Puranas were compiled before Mahabharata. That is an estimation of the date of the compilation of the different Vedic literatures. The synopsis of Srimad Bhagavatam was given before the detailed description under instruction of Narada. Right, so Prabhupada is also mentioning that point. Because it said he wrote it and then revised it. So then and there you get both aspects. Right? So that's the point. So in that way it was written before, but at the same time as in the form that's there, it's written after. For the devotees, it doesn't really matter, but those who get sticky about dates and all that, then they get worried about it. So then, you know, that comes up. And then you throw into the academics or the Mayavadis, so the Vopadeva did it, which was like, what, 700 years ago or something, mm-hmm. you know. So then that gets even the more weird thing. But if they say Vokudev did it, and it's only 700 years, but Shankara was before that, so Shankara didn't say that. That's just followers. So. But here it says amongst mundane scholars, so that you get that kind of thing. You know, how did this happen first and then this after? If Vyasadeva, you know, was compiling, but then how is it spoken by, you know, and then where is it, you know? Get into all these kind of things. You know, it's how you say, it can all be answered, but it's not clear, means directly dealt with, because that's not the importance of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is for understanding pure devotion. So those who are worried about, you know, the particular chronology and all that, then the Bhagavatam technically is not for them. They should be reading other Vedic literatures. You know. But Bhagavatam is for those who, that doesn't matter. You're dealing with timeless, and it's always there. Because we know the Bhagavatam is also, it's considered shruti, so it's always there. These pastimes are always going on. You know, so this uniqueness. You also have the thing, I would even say, is you might have the other aspect, either when it's having produced the 18 Puranas, that means in that short form, and then after is the long form. That's one way. But it can also mean that this is how it generally works, like yes. that. But when you're dealing with Swayam Krishna coming, then the Bhagavatam comes and is giving that element of that pure devotion, you know, that Braja Bhakti. Because otherwise, then it may be detailing, delineating pure devotion, but not necessarily focused on Braja. That's it. Just may, because that's another aspect. Because you always get these kulpa beta, these different kulpas, different things happen. You know, so it means there's so many ways to deal with it. But the point is it really doesn't matter, because here it is, and it's accepted by all the great personalities. And so that's the important element. Is that okay? 48.1, right? Because that means, in other words, the smartas and others, they'll make comments like this, so therefore it's dealt with. 48.1, continue, right? Just like, the person did this, how can they be advanced? Or, you know, the Bhagavatam, how can it be the highest scripture? You know, it's contradictory in when it was written, you know? So people put their faith in that. If I can understand it with my logic, if I can perceive it with the senses, then it's real. And if I can't, then... Does that make sense? So it's for dealing with that aspect. Does that make sense? Yeah. 48.1 continued. Because Sukadeva was immersed in the experience of the bliss of Brahman, he was quote unquote attached to renunciation, which means that in all situations he remained undeviatingly fixed in renunciation. Right, so attached to renunciation, but he's liberated, so it's not. But the point is, he preferred that renounced state, because then coming out, you get involved in so many things. So he preferred the renounced state, right? So only when it was guaranteed that when he appears that there won't be any entanglement, okay, then he appears. But then he still lives in a renounced state, right? Doesn't seem to bother much with like clothing. So, yes.
There seems to be two definitions of renunciation, like yukta vairagya and like just dropping everything.
No, well, there's only one definition, but there's the not understanding that one definition. So you have the proper understanding, and then you have a not so proper understanding.
I thought it was like one is like you just use everything for Krishna, and then there's another one.
That's the proper one.
Yeah, but then Jatabara, and like he didn't want to even deal with anything. He didn't even want to use anything for Krishna. He just
No, because it's not he doesn't want to use it for Krishna. It means that he's already absorbed in Krishna, so he doesn't need to use that method of sadhana. We have to remember that from when he's introduced, you know, in all three of the lifetimes, he's always on the Uttama platform. He never, you know, drops below that. So there is no technical reason that he needs to. He doesn't have to be a sadhaka like that. Does that make sense? But, you know, I mean, you can't complain in the second lifetime as a deer that, you know, you don't hear them, you know, over collecting there, you know, having a very big he attached himself to the biggest ashram there, you know, something like that. You know, you understand? So that's another thing. The point is in the sadhaka, is whatever you have, you engage it in the Lord's service. Now, according to your, prescribed duties, then you may, have more or less.
What do you mean, whatever you have?
Whatever you have means whatever you have. Okay, you know what I'm saying? After the class, when you go back to wherever you're staying, you know, get all whatever you have together and look at it. Right? And then you use that in Krishna's service. Right? It means, in other words, you might have more stuff somewhere else, but you're not there, so this is what you have. And when you go to the other place, then you have more. So you have more things to engage.
Then what is meant by you have to, like some people have to enter the grihastha ashram or whatever, then they don't have that. So how is it?
They get it.
Yeah, I know, but you said...
Well, actually, they don't get it. That's what we're working on. So they get it.
But you said engage what you have.
Yes.
So they don't have that. They get it, therefore they don't have it.
Yeah, but once you get it, you have it.
But you can get anything.
Yes, but it has to be within duties. That's why it says prescribed duties. It's always whatever is within the scope of your prescribed duties that you engage in the Lord's service.
And the temple president decides that.
That depends upon who you are.
He said this morning that they decide on the prescription.
That's if you're living fully in the temple, yes.
So then if you don't live in the temple?
Then you have to take advice from, you know, senior people, like the temple president. He didn't think that was funny. Okay, so, senior advice. The point is, the shastras say things, and you follow them. See, the principle is there, because everybody's a complete individual. Then you have to give the principles and enough example so that you can get an idea how to apply it. But they were not going to tell you exactly what to do because everybody's unique.
Can you decide your own prescribed duty?
You can, from within what is prescribed in Shastra,
yeah,
and by the authorities, then you can work it out. You just have to make sure that you're, intelligent enough to actually do that. But means that's part of it. You have to yourself be satisfied in the duties.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that true renunciation means you engage what interests you only?
No, but what interests you, but within prescribed duties. Because so many things may interest you.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You have the 16-year-old boy. Girls interest him, but it's not part of his duties. Right? So therefore, he can't engage that in the Lord's service.
But material things that are engageable that interest you, so therefore Jadavarat didn't have anything that interested him, so therefore he had nothing to engage. Is that right?
Yeah, if you want to take that approach, yeah, you could do that.
I was thinking that renunciation has nothing to do with external action.
No, means... You start there if you need to. In other words, if you only understand external, you start with external. Because then it gives you the idea. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, these simulators, you know, they learn how to fly planes and that. It's not actually the thing, but it's like as if. Because it has all the externals of, but it's not actually. So renouncing by giving up the externals, it's like simulating renunciation, but renunciation is actually the attitude. But by doing it, you can kind of like see that there's a connection or you could relate to it. So, yeah, I could do that. So then you have faith, you can... Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the idea. Yes.
So, if the mobile phone doesn't interest you, for example,
it's not a matter of interest.
Okay.
It's a matter of is it according to your situation something to use in the Lord's service, right? So at Jarabharat, see, the difficulty would be that there would be zero reception. So therefore, there's no way he could engage it in the Lord's service. Maybe it's a paperweight, but then they didn't have paper either. So therefore, there's nothing to do, right? There's no electricity, you wouldn't be able to charge it. So, you know, it's just, he wouldn't engage it.
So I guess I'm trying to understand that if you don't want to engage something, then you don't have to.
No, it's a matter of if it's not your duty to engage it, you don't engage it. If it is your duty, you engage it, whether you're interested or not. Arjuna was not interested in fighting, but as a Kshatriya, it's his duty to fight. It wasn't interest.
But he can have a preference between sword or arrows.
That's there, but that's what you can use. You may have a preference in one, but you actually have to be good at it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Just like if you go into the the parliament of any country, prime minister interests everybody there. But the reality is another thing. See, you have to. There's this thing called prescribed duties, which means according to your condition nature, what is the way to engage that? That's what you're supposed to be doing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. It's just that.
I'm just trying to figure out how much, leeway and variety there is within that. But anyway, I guess it's a case-to-case thing.
The leeway is according to what abilities you have.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's a businessman, but he's also very good at music. Why? Because he has that ability.
Yeah.
But business is his occupation, music is his hobby. Right? The musician, then music is his occupation. Business is just a side necessity that he has to do because he has to eat. So therefore, you want him to do a gig, you have to pay this much. But to him, it's not about the business, it's about the music. For the businessman, he's got tons of these guys that sing, or dance, or whatever they do, and you arrange, you'll do it, it's all business. You don't like it, you don't like the price, then forget it. You understand? So he's doing business in music. The other is doing music, and within that he has to do some business. So you have to see what's the ability. So it's not that the interest is there, but that interest has to be viable that it actually works. Right? Because everybody has interest in so many things. Okay. But you have to discern between what's occupation and what's a hobby. Okay? Srila Vyasadeva was guru to several eminent sages, so the fact that he chose to teach Srimad Bhagavatam to his son Sukadeva is significant. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.21-22 describes how Vyasa entrusted each branch of the Vedic literature to a different disciple. Rig Veda to Pila Rishi, Sama Veda to Jaimini, Yajur Veda to Vaishampayana, Atharva Veda Sumantu, and the Puranas to Romaharshana Sutta. However, he reserved the great treasure of the Vedas, the Srimad Bhagavatam, for his son, Sukadeva. More than fatherly affection, this was due to his son's unique qualifications as Nivriti Niratam Munim, perfectly free from material desires and undeviatingly fixed in the path of renunciation. Footnote 24. Oh, I see, that's just the line. I always thought you were underlining renunciation here. I really wanted to drive this point home. That's just the line at the bottom of the page. He was, undeviantly fixed in the path of renunciation. Okay. 24. There's a Puranic story which illustrates the subtle desire for enjoyment, afflicting even Srila Vyasadeva's most senior disciples. Once, as Vyasa was dictating verses to his disciple Jaimini, the following statement arose. One should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat even with one's own mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. Srimad Bhagavatam 9.9.17. Jaimini hesitated to write it down. Apologizing, he stated he could not agree that a self-realized sage might become agitated by the mere physical presence of a woman. Srila Vyasadeva simply smiled and, by his mystic power, turned himself into a young woman. Jaimini, attracted against his will, found himself trying to embrace the woman. who is just as suddenly, who just as suddenly transformed back into the old sage. That would have been a bit of a shock.
He wasn't shocked when he turned into a
good woman. No, he was shocked when he turned back and then understood what happened, you know, the whole thing.
Okay, I'll write the verse.
You win. So these things are, you know, these are the proper use of mystic power. Right? Yeah. I think Vishnu did that to Narad Muni. Mm-hmm. He was wondering, what is this, you know, attachment and family life? He asked him to go get some water. When he went to the river and he looked inside, a whole life of family life went, and then he lost everything and everything, and then it just turned back into the river. And then it's like, all right. that's what he means.
This Jaimini is the same one that we introduced when...
Karmali Mamsa, yes.
Yeah, same one.
Jaimini Sutras, so you see, they're very qualified people, but it's just that it's either that they have that mentality or they're writing for that mentality. It may be they understand beyond that, but they're writing for that mentality. Yes. But anyway, the effect is that. So when you say Jaimini, then it means Karmani Mimamsa. It's a, you know, just like Shankara means the Mahayana philosophy. Though we know it's Lord Shiva, and he's doing this for a purpose, because there has to be these philosophies for people to get distracted by. Right? Is that what I said? Yeah. So, therefore, it may be that they are no more, and they're actually great devotees or something, but they do this work. Or they're not. But in any case, when you deal with Jaimini's philosophy, you deal with it on the platform that it is. Just like Mayavad, we deal with it on the platform it is. It's not that we're lenient on it because Lord Shiva put it together. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it doesn't really matter which way it is. Because you see different places it discusses differently. So when it talks about the plan of the Lord, then Jaimini is seen in a more liberal light. Right? But when it's about the philosophy, then it's, you know, this is bogus. Mm-hmm. You understand? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam is so made. Did we finish something? Oh, yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments in this respect. Srimad Bhagavatam is so made that one becomes at once engaged in the path of self-realization simply by hearing the topics. Although it is especially meant for the Paramahamsas, or those who are totally engaged in self-realization, it works into the depths of the hearts of those who may be worldly men. Worldly men are all engaged in sense gratification, but even such men will find in this Vedic literature a remedial measure for the material diseases. Sugadeva Goswami was a liberated soul from the very beginning of his birth, and his father taught him Srimad Bhagavatam. So, it's written for the topmost transcendentalists, right? Because you have Hamsas, which are transcendentalists, and then Paramahamsas, which are transcendentalists beyond that. In other words, they understand the Vaishnava philosophy. Hamsa means that they're Brahman realized. Paramahamsa means that they actually realize Brahman and beyond. So it's for them, but even the materialistic person can get benefit because it enters, like you said, deep into the heart. Right? It removes these things. Right? Because we see from Rupa Goswami, we get an idea, because we're thinking deep into the heart and we have some understanding of Krishna and, you know, some basic that Maya is, you know, not good and all these different things. But Rupa Goswami, he's showing the depth what is talked about when you're dealing with these, you know, Paramahamsas. Then it's you know, when you hear the holy name, you wish you had, you know, millions of ears, and by chanting, you wish you had millions of tongues, like that. That's what level they're dealing on. Right? So, like that. Yeah. Yes.
As Prabhupada says in the chapter we're reading right now, Bhishma Dev, he mentioned about sages, saints, and what was it? Sages, saints, and brahmanas.
Okay.
Is there a difference?
Sages, saints, and brahmanas.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Your brahmanas means one who follows the brahminical duties, like that. You know, and one who's qualified, who does it properly.
Yeah.
So the mantras, the rituals, the teaching, all the occupations of a brahman.
Yeah.
sage will mean someone who is has real would be some real would be they know the shastras well, they have realization of the shastras, and generally they're leading a renounced lifestyle, not necessarily a grihastha lifestyle. Yeah. But they might be. Like Vyasadeva is the sage and he's married. It doesn't matter. But they're living that kind of more renounced lifestyle based on self-realization. And then what was the other one?
Saints.
Then that would be more of a specific, from what I can see. It's just there's some exemplary element of their lifestyle that is there to gain from. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, so saint would be like your character, sage would be their realization, and Brahman would be their occupation. Okay? Does that work? Thus, just as Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream of all Vedic literature, Sukadeva Goswami is the topmost of all transcendentalists. Then it becomes exceedingly transparent. You can see everything.
See right through it.
What a study guide. Okay. Summary of text 49. To understand the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shiva Goswami first analyzed the heart of Sukadeva Goswami. Text 29. Then analyzed the experience of the writer, Sri Vyasadeva, text 30 to 48. Now Jiva Goswami concludes this analysis by citing two Bhagavatam verses, 1:7, 10 through 11. The first is the Atmarama verse, which states the principle, even liberated souls are attracted to Krishna's irresistible personal qualities and pastimes as given in Bhagavatam. Mm. The second of these provides a concrete example of such an Atmarama, Sukadeva Goswami, the Bhagavatam's own narrator. Sukadeva's attraction to the Bhagavatam further underlines its super excellence. Thus, Jiva Goswami demonstrates how Sukadeva's realizations match those of his father, Srila Vyasadeva. The essential lesson is that the Bhagavatam's import must be understood according to the attitudes of the speakers, and not otherwise. Any deviant interpretation is simply mental speculation. Right, so that was his point in the beginning, is that Amnaya has to come from authority. So now he's introducing, it's not just that it's authority, but that authority has a particular perspective, a particular mood and approach. Right? And that's what's going to give you success. Right? So now, in other words, you're learning from the right source. Right? In other words, you're learning from the particular scripture or the particular qualified person. But now the next is, what's the attitude of that? Right? Because that has to be there. So now that we've established that Bhagavatam is the book, then it's a matter of, well, what's the mood in approaching this, right? Just like in Gita, in the introduction, the first thing Prabhupada introduces is the spirit of how you're going to approach it, right? Because with that, then you'll get the benefit. But if it's not there, the benefit will not be so good.
Yes.
Okay, text 49, part 1. Further, clarifying these in-trance realizations of Veda Vyas, the verse Atmaramas Cha is spoken as the answer to a question by Sri Shonaka, footnote 25. The Atmarama verse, Atmaramas Chamuneyo Nirgananta Apyurukrame Kurvant Yahaitukim Bhaktim Itam Bhuta Guno Hari. Though freed from all kinds of material bondage, those who take pleasure in the spirit of self-desire to render unalloyed service under the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. 1:7:10. Okay. So this point here is that those who, although free from material bondage, means the liberated souls, right? They take pleasure, they are taking pleasure in this Bhagavatam, or unalloyed service to the personality of Godhead, right? That's your point being discussed here. This verse upholds Vyasadeva's realization by citing the experience of all kinds of self-satisfied persons, Atmaramas, and by giving a logical reason, those who are, quote, free from restrictions, nirgunanta, are either beyond Vedic injunctions and prohibitions or free from the knots of false ego. 26. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on the first definition, giving the one meaning of nirgunanta as, quote, one who has no connection with scriptural injunction, i.e., who is free from the obligation of the rules and regulations mentioned in the revealed scripture, like ethics, Vedas, philosophy, psychology, metaphysics. In other words, the fools, illiterate, urchins, etc., who have no connection with regular principles. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10 purport. Fools, illiterate, urchins, etc.
That bunch.
Fools, illiterates, urchins, and the rest. Yes. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan expands on the second of these definitions. Nirgunanta means persons free from ahankara, which is generated from mahatattva. The identity of the self within the Atma is not extinguished at this time. Thus, on this stage, one is free from false ego. One's real ego never dissolves. Okay. Sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to say it's interesting how Shukadev, he meets both definitions. At first, he's surrounded by the fools, illiterates, and urchins. They're following him around.
Yes.
And then it's revealed how actually it's not out of ego. He's completely liberated from the second definition.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So the ahankar generated by the mahatattva, that would mean that one has to be in some way connected with maybe not the conditioning but the Purusha Bhav, right? Because someone who's beyond the Purusha Bhav, there's no false ego, generated by mahatattva. So then technically, those who are, in other words, the Mayavadis could not be on this platform, right? Yes. Brahmavadis, yes, because they just see I am Brahman, so they're not thinking I'm the controller and enjoyer, I'm just Brahman. But it's still not a ideal position, because then there's the, you know, happiness derived from that position of Brahman, right? The word causeless, ahetuki, means without looking for profit. To remove any doubt about the claims made about the Atmaramas, the word such are his qualities, itam bhuta guna, are spoken. His qualities are such that they naturally attract even the self-satisfied. Right? First, Sutta Goswami establishes a general principle that in all varieties of self-satisfied persons, though liberated from material bondage, they still desire to engage in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada further elaborates. According to Hari Bhakti Shudodoy, the import of the word itam bhuta is complete bliss. The transcendental bliss and the realization of impersonal Brahman becomes comparable to the scanty water contained in the pit made by a cow's hoof. It is nothing compared with the ocean of bliss of the vision of the personality of Godhead. The personal form of Lord Krishna is so attractive that it comprehends all attraction, all bliss and all tastes, rasa. These attractions are so strong that no one wants to exchange them for material enjoyment, mystic powers, and liberation. There is no need of logical arguments in support of this statement. But out of one's own nature, one becomes attracted by the qualities of Lord Sri Krishna. We must know for certain that the qualities of the Lord have nothing to do with mundane qualities. All of them are full of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. Sutta Goswami, after giving this general principle, in the next verse gives a specific example of the appreciation of the principle, Sukadev Goswami, 49.2. This idea is also held by Sri Sukadev's own experience, described in the verse beginning Harer Guna, footnote 27. Srila Sukadev Goswami, the son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus, his mind captivated by the enchanting qualities of Lord Hari, he underwent the study of the great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.11. But not only transcendently powerful, because he's situated on that platform, so he has that potency. But besides that, he was very dear to the devotees. So that's only going to happen if you are absorbed in Bhagavatam. Right? Because if you're only absorbed in Brahman, you're not going to be dear to the devotees. Right? You're going to be transcendently situated. Yes.
Or boring.
Yeah, could be. First, Sukadeva's attitude, mati, his perception of bliss in the impersonal supreme, was changed by the little he heard directly from Sri Vedavyasa about the qualities of Lord Hari. Like, he didn't have to go through all nine cantos, because he already was liberated. So just he chose a few that talked about the sweetness of the Lord, and then immediately he's attracted. Then he studied the entire extensive work. As a result, the devotees of Lord Vishnu became perpetually dear to him. Because now he sees that if the Lord's what's important, that means the devotees are important, because the Lord means with the devotees. Or, alternatively, he became dear to them because of the friend... I'm not sure. I mean, how do you... does it change here? Because the underlining, instead of li, you say lie or something? Lie relations, the... And then he developed while discussing together topics of the Lord. Because of the friendly relations they developed while discussing together topics of the Lord. So they're dear to him because he actually understands the position, but he becomes dear to them because he was always discussing Bhagavatam. Yes. Yes.
So this is the actual basis of relationship between the devotees.
Yes. Yes. It'll be that connection with Krishna. So it may be one appreciates, you know, how they're doing it or the particular personality or these kind of things, but it's based on association because of devotional service. That has to be the, you know what I'm saying? That has to be what's prominent. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be something else. You know? It shouldn't be, you know, they're funny, so, you know, and they're a devotee. It should be they're a devotee, and you like because they're funny. Does that make sense? Yeah. Footnote 28, quote, and this is from... Okay, Bhagavatam Purport. Practically, he was thrown from the impersonal conception of the Absolute, thinking within himself that he had simply wasted so much time in devoting himself to the impersonal feature of the Supreme. Or in other words, he realized more transcendental bliss with the personal feature than the impersonal. Because that's what it said before, is that when they're talking about the calf's hoof print, because the amount of water in the calf's hoof print really doesn't amount to much. You know, it's not technically, according to Manu, it's not usable. Right? It has to be at least enough. There's a puddle on the ground and it's clear water. If it's enough water that would be required to remove a cow's thirst, right? You know, and they can drink sometimes a couple of buckets of water. So it has to be that big. Then you could use that water for purifying yourself or something like that. So that's the minimum small size of, you know. So a calf's hoof print, or here you said cow's hoof print, but sometimes it's even calf's hoof print. So then it's just, that's not nothing at all. So that's actually how they consider, you know, the Brahman realization or anything. It's just doesn't have any importance at all. You know what I'm saying? It's not just, they're saying that. That's actually how they look at it. It just doesn't have any importance. So here he's thinking that I've wasted my time, you know, in this impersonal Brahman.
Yes.
Because not that that he could have been out enjoying himself, you know, that, you know, it's that it's a waste because he could have been absorbing himself in Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Right.
Yes.
Back to what you just said before, if your relationships are based on that the person devotee, then wouldn't it be the more devotional they are, or whatever, then the more you like them?
The thing is we have our conditioning, so there's certain means we're going to be engaged in Krishna's service in a certain way depending on our conditioning. Okay? So others who have similar nature then will appreciate how they're engaged in Krishna's service.
Yeah. So then
you understand that's the point we're talking about.
But then being funny is conditioning. But it's got nothing to do with conversion of service, I guess, but it's... Like, which bit are you going to like first? The way
that they're a devotee. Yeah. Means it doesn't matter, you're going to notice something and then the others will come. It just depends upon what you saw first. You know what I'm saying?
But then, so then, what kind of relationship do you have with the devotees that you don't have a shared conditioning with?
It'll be just the devotional service. You do your sadhana together and things like that.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But it won't necessarily be so close.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That's all. And from that time, not only did he himself become very dear to the Vishnu Janas, or the devotees of the Lord, but also the Vishnu Janas became very dear to him.
What?
Yes.
Why this stress? Especially not only he himself became dear, but the devotees also became dear to him.
Just to throw out something. I mean, if you look up just before, see the underline of relations like that, I think it has something to do with that part, you know. You know, so you have two aspects, the li and the da. Right? Yeah. No, but still, someone can... You have affection for the devotees, but it's not necessarily that they have for you. Okay. So therefore, he's mentioning both.
And vice versa.
It's nice.
Yes, yeah. Both is good.
No, I was thinking that because he was a Brahmavadi and announced to be touched.
But now that he's become a devotee, but they're talking about him after he's come to. That's why it says here. And he, thinking within himself, he has simply wasted so much time in devoting himself to the impersonal feature of the Supreme, because basically, while he's in the womb, the only ones he'll have contact with is his mother and father, right? Until Krishna came along, and so then that's, you know. So does that make sense? So. Because before that, no one was important to him. Because it's all Brahman. It's just, you know, Brahman's important, so you're also Brahman, so you're also important in the way that everything's important. Right? Does that make sense? So, there's no uniqueness. But having become a devotee, now, then all the devotees of the Lord are dear to him because the Lord's dear to him. But because he's always discussing about the pastimes of the Lord, he becomes very dear to the devotees as well. Right. So you appreciate the position of the devotees, the service they're rendering, and then others may appreciate your position.
So there was no ego involved because they accepted him right away and he was on the Vyasa's son and just...
Yes, yes. I mean, it doesn't even mention they asked him to take a bath, right? No, it's just... You know. Well, it wasn't an issue. Is that because they can just understand, they being transcendentalists, they can understand his position as a transcendentalist. Yes.
I think it's also connected to the point in the second chapter of the first canto when his father is calling out in separation, and even the trees are echoing back.
Yeah.
Even the trees were affectionate towards
Shukadeva Swami. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, or even the devotees, even the trees.
Yeah. And also Srila Vyasadeva, it wasn't so much out of paternal affection, but it was because of that devotional connection, because he wanted to impart the Bhagavatam to him and that attraction on the transcendental platform.
Yes. Well, I mean, he's a transcendentalist already.
Yeah.
So then if he hears Bhagavatam, then he'll go from Hamsa to Paramahamsa.
Mm.
Yes, and then he can do, more benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, both for himself and for others. Yeah.
It seems that all Brahmanandi become very quickly pure devotee of Krishna.
All the
Brahmanandi.
Brahmanandis, can, but we don't hear of many real Brahmanandis. Yeah, there may be more, but those are the two that are brought out. Mayavadis is bucket loads, right? but Brahmavadis we don't hear of many like that. But technically they can.
When there is no ahankar, means there is connection with Krishna.
No, when there's no ahankar, means that there's no false material identity. So therefore, they understand I'm the soul, I'm Brahman. So when they come in contact with the supreme Brahman, they immediately can see that superior position, and so they don't have any problem in understanding who they are. That's the meaning. The self-realized soul is. Just laughing because he's going down. I was thinking, he's got to raise his hand. This is your finishing.
Don't let us down.
That puts pressure on. Yep.
So they don't think that they're the controller and enjoyer. But they don't know that they're a servant?
They don't know about service. They just know there's Brahman.
Mm.
So, in other words, they're at the tatastha position. So they don't have the Purusha Bhav as such. But they don't have devotional understanding or direction.
It would seem like an identity crisis.
That's the position. The tatastha is that. That's the position. Why it's mentioned that, why it's so much mentioned about that the happiness of devotional service makes the happiness of Brahman seem like the water on the calf's hoofprints. Right? Because that's important, because that's the position that we've started from and fallen from. So we're thinking that's the goal to get back to there, but they're trying to point out you have to get back to there, but that's not the goal. The goal is then prema. Because that neutral state of Brahman, it's not important. Compared to here, it's very great. But the soul being eternal, part and parcel of the Lord, Brahman is just their position of existence.
Yes.
It's not their focus of attention. Right? It's not what they're inspired about. It's not what they do, and it's not the experience that they taste.
It's just the
definition within Shankarshan that the soul is transcendental, is liberated. That's it. But then the whole point is rasa, is then the Prajumna, Vasudeva, and Aniruddha, those are all connected to Krishna.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Potato. Yes.
If Paramahamsas they don't have anything to gain or learn from the material world, and they're not really interested in giving their association, then what is the purpose of their being here?
No, but the second one, why is that? That's not an inherent definition. Means there's nothing interesting here, but that doesn't mean that they have any problem. Like Sukadev Goswami wasn't telling all the kids to beat it. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Right? You heard about him saying that? Right? Didn't say that? no moonwalk. No. Okay. Probably better.
You can't tell that from what?
Huh? No, not at all. And he didn't care. Okay? No.
No.
I can't hear properly.
You can't hear properly. Oh, okay. They don't have any connection with anything here, but it's not that they don't want to be, associate with anybody. They're happy to associate with other on the transcendental platform. They just have no interest to associate on the mundane platform.
What about, like, Babaji?
It's the same thing.
Oh, and there's just nobody happens to be around on that platform.
If there's no one around, then you just sit there and chant. And if there's someone around, then it, but it's just. But now, if they're taking the position where they're preaching, Paramahamsa doesn't mean that they don't preach.
Yeah.
So when they do that, then they take the mood of the Madhyama, just like Sukadeva Goswami. He's acting on the Paramahamsa platform. He's not really even worried about what's going on. But when he sits on the Vyasasana, then he acts as a Madhyama.
So the ones that are preaching, would it? They'd be better off, like, somewhere where there's more association of their own.
Like, no, but where's the example where you're getting worried about that there's Paramahamsa sitting out there with no association?
No.
In other words, don't project these things. You know what I'm saying? Like this morning, you know, projecting the whole scenario out in the middle of the desert. Because who lives out in the middle of the desert?
I know a few.
Yeah, but there's no one else out there. There's nothing. There's no anxieties. There's no dangers. You know. You have to lock the door. You know, the badger will come in and bite your leg off. You know, there's all kinds of things happening. You know what I'm saying? Mosquitoes are there. That's why they have hats with corks and flies and, you know, all these kinds of things, right? And then what do you do with all the titties, you know? And then where do you get the ice to put in the little thing to keep the titties cold? These are major problems out there in the middle of the desert. Right? So it's not that they solve problems. We were talking about problems. It doesn't matter where you are, there's going to be problems. But we were discussing that you may not have problems of crowd of humans, but crowds of, you know, how you say, crocodiles, crowds of wombats, crowds of, you know, kangaroos, wallabies, you know, you name it, you know, echidnas and all these things. You know, you're going to have them. Does that make sense? So the thing is you don't project it out there. You don't need to. The point is now if you are a Paramahamsa and you have a difficulty in, you know, relating to just, you know, what you perceive as quite mundane in the local social scene, and so you just sit in your own little place and chant your japa all day, you know, and just are not finding someone to, you know, that has an interest in Krishna consciousness that you can spark any kind of conversation, then ask that question. But if it's not, why are you worried about the Paramahamsa? That means Krishna will take care of him. Right? Sukadeva Goswami, you know, has Vyasadeva to worry about him, you know? Krishna comes and helps, so they're taken care of. You worry about yourself and how you're going to apply this. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Oh, dingoes. That's a tough one.
They steal babies.
Huh?
They steal babies.
Yeah, steal babies. As long as they don't steal the tinnies, right? So it's okay.
Take the babies.
The devotees of the Lord who do not wish to kill the individuality of the living entities and who desire to become personal servitors of the Lord do not very much like the impersonalists. And similarly, the impersonalists who desire to become one with the Supreme are unable to evaluate the devotees of the Lord. They, you know, there's, what do you, if there's only one, how do you evaluate it? Thus, from time immemorial, these two transcendental pilgrims have sometimes been competitors. In other words, each of them likes to keep separate from the other because of the ultimate personal and impersonal realizations. Therefore appears that Srila Sukadev Goswami also had no liking for the devotees. But since he himself became a saturated devotee, he desired always the transcendental association of the Vishnujanas, and the Vishnujanas also liked his association, since he became a personal Bhagavata. Srimad Bhagavatam 1711 purport, right? So that's the what? Does that make sense? So in other words, they're comparing it also in that way to before. As an impersonalist, he wouldn't have cared about the devotees. Devotees wouldn't have cared about him. But now that he's become a Bhagavat, he cares about devotees and devotees care about him. Or you could say it from that he does care about devotees and devotees care about him. That means he's a Bhagavat. Mm-hmm. Okay. Go down the line. Potato. Yes.
No.
Oh, okay.
Other direction.
Okay. Now we go to the next page. Implicit in his description are these events recounted in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. It means. Okay. This is still continuing with 492.
Yes.
Okay. Even while Sukadev was residing in his mother's womb, he became aware that Lord Sri Krishna, whenever he desires, can dispel material illusion. Sukadev then impelled Sri Vyasadev to bring Krishna there, so that having a vision of the Lord within the womb would remove for Sukadev all danger of illusion. Footnote 29.
Huh? Became a devotee while in the womb?
It appears so. That's why he came out. Otherwise, if he was just a Brahma body, why should he come out? It's just as Brahman inside as outside. So
he heard the verses.
Yes, he already heard before. That was Vyasadeva was trying to catch his attention.
We get into this point in the next.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Paragraph.
Okay. So this is preliminary. Okay. She asked before, and then it starts coming down until then we get to the. Well timed. See, he's not as stupid as he looks.
No. He's good.
Yeah. Okay, 29. Sukadev's incapacitating fear of Maya was immediately dispelled by Krishna's darshan. Thus, even while in the womb, Sukadev could recognize that Krishna was master of his inferior energy, Maya. Right, because that was important, because if he was master of that, then by surrendering to Krishna, then you could be free from Maya. Right? Otherwise, then you would... Then he wouldn't want to come out. Mm-hmm. Right? He wouldn't want to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. This accomplished, Sukadev considered his life successful, and at once left home, going off alone. Thinking of how to influence Sukadev, Sri Veda Vyas recited the only Srimad Bhagavatam. He decided that only Srimad Bhagavatam could effectively do this. He had someone recite certain verses from the Bhagavatam, revealing Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities, in a place where Sukadev could hear them. Footnote 30. It is said that Vyasadeva orders his disciples to recite Bhagavatam shlokas aloud whenever they collected firewood. Baladev Vidyabhushan describes that specifically captured his son's mind. Quote, Vyasadeva had Sukadev hear certain verses, such as Putana attaining the position of a nurse, and Krishna acting as Arjuna's charioteer and doorkeeper. Although Sri Baladev does mention which Bhagavatam verses explicitly, Vaishnava scholars tend to agree that they include the following.
Does not mention.
Oh, because I was thinking, he says that, and then they said that. Okay. Bhishma Dev addressing Yudhishthira. O king, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is that very personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.20. And alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of a mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful, and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.23. Is it continuing? No.
No.
This created a change in the mind of Sukadeva, who then studied the entire work. This history shows the super excellence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nor is Sukadeva Goswami an exceptional case. You want to say something?
Yeah, this is the same verse, the Putana verse, that made Pundarika Janiti go mad too.
Oh, it's
when
the same.
When Gadadhar Pandit went to meet him.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So this was when Sukadeva was out living yesterday?
Yes, no, this is after he had left and gone into the forest. So it says when the disciples would go out to collect firewood, right? Then they would recite these verses out loud.
Yes.
Right? And so that would attract his attention.
So it was because of these verses that he became attracted?
Attracted to study Bhagavatam. He had already heard something before. Some discussions, at least from his father, about the transcendental position of Krishna and how Maya is, you know, under his control. So Sukadeva, not wanting to get distracted by Maya, then thought, okay, then if I see Krishna, then I won't be, and then I can become not distracted by Maya. Right? And so if that's the case, then he's not worried about coming out into the world. Because in the womb, you don't have a lot of forms there. You know what I'm saying? There's not a lot happening, you know. Bumping into an elbow now and again or something, you know. But that's about it, right? But outside, then you have so much variety. So he was worried about that. So when Krishna said, he'll never become distracted, then, okay. But then he came out and immediately left home and went into the forest. So then the disciples, then they recite these verses, and that became, you know, then he became attracted to the transcendental position of Krishna in his pastime. So he came and then studied.
And how can he study? He was alone?
No. Then he would come back and he studied with Vyasa.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yes.
It appears as if they did Harinam, you know, just in the forest.
Okay, yeah. They can just go and, you know, you're collecting firewood, so, you know, you sing and chant verses. But they use specific verses just that will show this element of rasa and how going from one position to another, those kind of verses.
So he first heard Bhagavatam while he was in the womb?
He heard, means at least synopsis.
Something.
Yeah, means because in other words, it had been already. It's not sure. I mean, it's not specific here, but he's heard a synopsis of it, because Vyasadeva had written the synopsis of Bhagavatam. But it doesn't seem that as such it was published in this form. So then this he then spoke to Sukadeva, right? Means that full form, and then. But what's documented here is then his speaking of it, right? You know, and Sutta Goswami, and like that whole. Okay. Nor is Sukadeva Goswami an exceptional case. Srila Prabhupada shows how the all-attractive personality of Godhead has the capacity to captivate everyone's minds. There are innumerable qualities of the Lord, and one is attracted by one quality while another is attracted by another. Great sages such as the four bachelor devotees, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, were attracted by the fragrance of flowers and tulsi leaves anointed with the pulp of sandalwood offered at the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, Sukadeva Goswami was attracted by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Sukadeva Goswami was already situated in the liberated stage, yet he was attracted by the pastimes of the Lord. This proves that the quality of his pastimes has nothing to do with material affinity, means him meaning Krishna. Similarly, the young cowherd damsels were attracted by the bodily features of the Lord. And Rukmini was attracted by hearing about the glories of the Lord. Lord Krishna attracts even the minds of the goddess, even the mind of the goddess of fortune. He attracts, in special cases, the minds of all young girls. He attracts the minds of the elderly ladies by paternal affection. He attracts the minds of the male in the humors of servitude and friendship. By his personal features and transcendental attributes, the Lord attracts all psychological activities of a pure devotee, such as the attractive power of Lord Krishna. So he has unlimited qualities. So the different devotees will be attracted by different specific qualities. Right? So therefore, there's the variety in the rasa, variety in the pastimes, because you're bringing out different aspects of his qualities. Because rasa means the exchange based on those qualities. 49.3. In this way, it is shown that the speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sri Sukha, shared the same attitude as Sri Vedavyas. Therefore, in all cases, we should analyze the purport of the Bhagavatam strictly in accordance with the attitude of its speaker, not otherwise. We must conclude that any analysis that disagrees with Sukadeva's ideas will only create a perverted understanding. The verses under discussion, Bhagavatam 1.7.10-11, were spoken by Sri Suta Goswami. After taking such efforts to validate the epistemic, supremacy of Srimad Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami insists that its conclusions can only be understood by those sympathetic to Sukadev Goswami's outlook. Right, so now they've shown how it is the supreme literature, but at the same time as you'll only understand it if you take this mood that is given by Sukadev. Sukadev Goswami became enamored of the Lord's transcendental qualities and henceforth committed himself to the service of glorifying him. Since Sukadev Goswami is presented as a reformed impersonalist, to argue that the Srimad Bhagavatam supports impersonalism would be an uphill battle. Since this section and its corresponding argument hinges on Sukadev Goswami's identity as a liberated renunciant, Balade Vidyabhushana concludes by preemptively dispelling any doubts that could be raised by critical scholars. In Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it's explained that Sukadev was born from a womb, but in Mahabharata, it's said that he was not born from a womb. Footnote 31. The Mahabharata relates how Sukadev appeared from the fire of a stick of wood. Okay. It is also described that he accepted a wife and had a daughter. This is adjusted by explaining that the differing events happened in a different day of Brahma. Right, so the same principle we were discussing there. Just like Parikit Maharaj, we know he sat down and heard the Bhagavatam. But in the Mahabharata, describes how there was no discussion of Bhagavatam at all. He just made himself a special fort and stayed in that. Right? So it was different. There's no even mention of Mahabharata being discussed or Bhagavatam being discussed or anything. So all it is just different ages. Okay. In the next, does that make sense? So when it mentions he's born from a stick of wood, or mentions that he's born from the womb, or that he was a renunciate living in the forest, or he came back and accepted a wife and had a daughter. These are just talking about different manifestations of this pastime. In the next Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami outlines the overall scheme of the Satsandarbhas. 3.2, Srimad Bhagavatam's message defined in terms of understanding the Jiva and the Supreme Brahman. 50-55. The absolute truth is non-dual consciousness. The Jivas are his parts. Okay, 50-52. Summary of 50. According to Srila Balade Vidyabhushan, in this verse, Vyasa explains his other realizations in samadhi in order to make the prayojan or Bhagavat prema clear. Text 50. 50.1, to definitively establish the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam as outlined above. The six sandarbhas set forth in detail the topics one after another of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. To begin with, in the verse Dharma Projita Kaitava, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2, the words Vedyam Vastavam Ataravastu discuss in general terms the truth with which the scripture has a relationship between, quote, what is to be described, vachya, and, quote, what is that which describes it, vachaka. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, now the author begins to show in detail the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, which were mentioned in brief. This is done according to the views of Sukadeva Goswami and others, tattvaiva. The tattva sandarbha serves as an introduction to the sandarbhas, in that it explains the overall subject established through the book. Technically, this relationship is called the vachya-vachakata sambandha, or the relation of the subject with the words of the book. Because it means it should be that the subject matter is what's described by the words in the book. You know, by reading it, it doesn't make any sense. It's that they're not matching. Right? The subject is stated in the second verse of the Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastavam Ataravastu. The absolute reality is to be understood herein. As discussed earlier, there are various levels of manifestation of reality, but Srimad Bhagavatam gives knowledge about the one absolute reality, Sri Krishna, who it encompasses and reconciles all other realities. Right, so the subject then is clear. It's about Sri Krishna, the supreme absolute truth. Sages like Kanada and Gotama developed alternate conceptions of absolute reality. Lacking fidelity to Sukadeva Goswami's realizations, however, marked them as relative and incomplete. Jiva Goswami alludes to such unsuccessful philosophies. Next. 50.1 continued. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on this verse, says, quote, in this opulent, beautiful Bhagavatam, the object to be known is that which is of real substance, transcendental worth, not the relative entity, such as physical matter and its qualities, described by the Vaisheshikas and others. Vavartika Deepika 1.1.2. Right. Oh, I see. So that means he comments on the whole Bhagavatam, all 12 cantos. Otherwise he wouldn't have three numbers, right? Because this is also 1.1.2 for the verse 1.1.2.
Yeah.
So it must be...
That must be one.
Yeah. Okay. So...
Sridhar-swami.
Yeah. So, you know, he's saying it's... In other words, the real substance, the vastava-vastu, the really real thing, is Krishna. Right? So that's what the Bhagavatam is about. It's kicking out everything else. So in other words, it's pure devotion, and that's it. It's not talking about anything else. So the Lord, his devotees, based on relationship of pure devotion. Right? That's the verse under discussion, 1.1.2, is spoken by Sri Veda Vyas. Srila Balakrishna, because he's written it. So now and again he comes in. So at the very beginning he comes in. But now and again, sometimes you have one verse where Vyas speaks, and then immediately goes back into Sutta, or then it goes back into Sukadeva, or it goes back into the person or the other. So you'll have sometimes like that. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments, the supreme goal is to be known, the supreme goal to be known is not the matter and gunas, as described in the scriptures of Kanada and Gotama, which are also called Vastu, right? Because he says, it was substance. In other words, vastu means substance. Right? So then, here is the vastava vastu. What is the substance of the substance? So that's what he's saying. It's not these things. The Vaisheshika philosophy established in the sutras of Kanada Rishi is a sophisticated analysis of reality through a system of seven ontological categories. One, substance, dravya. Two, quality, guna. Three, movement, karma. Four, generality, jati. Five, individuality, visesha. Six, inherence, samavaya. And absence, abhava. Because then when you're dealing with an element, it has all these aspects. You know, what is its substance? What is its qualities? What can it do? What is the category? What is the specific individuality that that particular one has? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, inherence means, you know, what would be the, what that's already, what does inherence mean then?
Inherence is like when a clay pot is red. Is that red quality is inhering in that object?
Oh, qualities within within its nature.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then absence means that it, if it's not there, then it can be perceived through its lack of being there. Mm-hmm. Okay. It is true that an understanding of these elements leads to understanding of a certain level of reality. Even Vaishnava authors use Vaisheshika concepts to analyze physical existence. However, they adjust their use of borrowed terms to correct the mistakes in the way the terms are used in the original formulations. This borrowing is justified by the principle of paramatam, aprashti siddhim anumatam. Parts of arrival theory that are not specifically contradicted are acceptable to adopt. Right? Because in other words, everybody's dealing, basically trying to explain the same reality. You know, just how much they understand how good they're doing at it. Right? So then those aspects that are acceptable, then they can be used. It's not a problem. Right? But then the thing is what's not acceptable, that's what's rejected. So then these things that we see, in other words, these seven elements, the you know, Jaiminis, you know, the Tat Paryalingas, Gotama's Panchanga Nyaya, you know, these elements, these are useful because they don't contradict the Vaishnava philosophy. Mm. Right? But now what they do with them, that's another thing. Right? But the principle that they use means this is intelligent. If you can figure out the substance of what something is, the quality of what it is, what its actual use is, or what it does, what the general category it fits into, what the specifics of it, you know, means the and other elements that are inherent in it. So then all these aspects, then putting that together, you can really understand something. People don't take it to that far. You know, it's just like, wow, this is a nice thing, you know, like that. Oh, look what I bought today. Yeah, it's nice. What does it do? Well, I don't know.
It's nice.
You know, I liked it, you know. You know, it says it's just okay, but, you know, and why do you like it? Well, I don't know. It's nice. You know, so you can't deal with these things. So we're talking about a very, like you said here, sophisticated analysis of reality. But it only takes the material reality up to a certain level. It doesn't take it beyond to the Supreme, its connection with the Supreme. Ultimately, however, speculative thought can approach the truth only with relative success. Physical reality cannot compare with the absolute reality, which is the sole object of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the physical reality, depending on how good you are, someone comes up with something better. Yes. Right? So we can much of the time quote with you know, comfortably, examples of logic used by these great personalities, and generally most people don't have the qualifications to find some fault in it. But it's not that it can be. Or in their own logic, in their own brain, even though it may not be logical, they'll come up with some different conclusion. So that's why, ultimately, you don't want to leave it at this analysis. There has to be that faith in the Lord. The Supreme Tattva does not reveal himself to those unwilling to know him as the Supreme Person. Now, if you only want to know him as Brahman or Paramatma, there's enough literature that already deals with that. Right? And worldly interests cloud realization of the absolute truth. So if you're interested in the Supreme Person, but what you can get, then to that degree is that it's on what you're going to benefit, to the degree it's clouded. At the outset, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2 proclaims that it would avoid these distractions. Dharma projita kaitubotra. Here, all deceptive ideas of religion are rejected. So therefore, only what's in support of pure devotional service is retained. Any other interpretation is not. So that throws out all the six schools that are not in line with devotion. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the absolute reality, Vastu, is presented as Vastava, meaning connected with everything related to him. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the words vastava indicate the vastu's three principal expansions in this world. The jivas, who are particles emanating from him, maya, his ruling energy in this world, and his avatars, his advanced in the physical cosmos. Okay, vastava. So that was meaning connected with everything related to him. So that means him, his energies, and then, as Bhagavatam would bring out, rasas. Right? The six sandarbhas show how Srimad Bhagavatam fully explains these and his other expansions. The last two sandarbhas focus especially on the relationship of the jivas with the vastava vastu in pure love, bhakti. Right? The nature of the ultimate reality is explained in the next section. Again, we'll come to that. So in other words, the first three then are means well here. In this case it would be four. Means because this is tattva. So tattva and the next three, they're defining sambandha, right? So the Lord, the living entities, the material energy, the relationships, how all this works. So then you're getting the vastava vastu, right? How the Lord is connected with everything. He is substance, and he's connected with everything. That's what makes everything substance. Then the last two, they're about pure love, bhakti, right? The process of and the effect of. Okay? Yes. So Abhideya and Trayocha. Yes. Right? And we can see very clearly here is that this is there. Jiva Goswami himself uses these terms, Samanda Abhideya Prayojana.
Yes.
Baladeva Dibhushan in his commentaries is pointing that same thing out. Right? So this is the, and that's what then Bhaktivinoda Thakur documents. You know, seeing these points that are always discussed and then puts that into the Dasamul. Right? Which is simply giving the categories of Samanda Abhideya and Prayojana, so that's very clear. Any questions? Yes.
Is there any reason why sambandha is like, I don't know, what it is, 60 or 70% of the whole sandarbhas?
Because one needs to understand all these things very clearly. Because means we're, in other words, we're here in the material world from not understanding these things. Right? You know, so though that's to get us where we're agreeable to apply ourselves into the process of devotional service with the goal of love of God. Otherwise, we look at everything by the same sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. But the sambandha is everything's connection with me and how I can, abhideya, use it, you know, to get the prayojana of my enjoyment. Right? So therefore, to break that down, therefore, there's so much analysis. Because otherwise, we just hear, we see like the gopis, just, you know, very simple, their attraction to the Lord. It wasn't a big analytical thing. The four kumaras, just they smelled the tulsi and flowers with chandan at the lotus feet of the Lord, and they were attracted. They could understand there's something beyond the Brahmananda. And Sukadeva Goswami, the sweetness of the Bhagavatam, like that. So it doesn't necessarily take much. But we see these are liberated souls, right? And that for us, then, you know, liberated may not be the ideal word. You know what I'm saying? The soul is liberated, and technically, as we're chanting and we're involved in the process, we're liberated. But our conditioning is such, we still think in a conditioned way. And it's consciousness that defines your position, like that. So even though we are transcendental, because the consciousness is focused on the material, we function within the material. If our consciousness was focused on the transcendental, we'd be functioning in transcendental. For Sukadeva Goswami sitting out in the forest, there is only Brahman. You know, so there is no, you know, how you say, illusion. It's all Brahman. You know, it's material energy Brahman, or external energy Brahman. But it's still Brahman. But now he hears about internal potency Brahman, and that attracts his attention. Because otherwise, Jiva Brahman and external potency Brahman, then, you know, it's not, you're not going to have a party.
That's an interesting point that we noticed, that in how it describes that he was in the womb, but still he wanted Krishna to come.
Yes.
So for him it was all Brahman, but then Krishna somehow, he made that distinction.
Yes, because he had heard that, because there is, it's all Brahman, but he's heard that this aspect of Brahman is, it can't free you from the fear of being entangled in material energy. So if you connect yourself or anything on this aspect, you know, then, so then when Krishna came, then he became, you know, okay, satisfied that he's not going to get involved. And so then he left. But then by hearing the Bhagavatam verses, then he switched from being a Brahmanandi into being a devotee. Yes.
With reference to what you were talking about the gopis and four kumaras, they each had their own attraction. So in the scriptures we hear about name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Mm. And so Shukadev was to the Leela, the gopis were to the Rupa, and the kumaras were to the Guna. Mm. But for us, because we're not on that platform, we need Nam. So that's why it says Nam, Guna, Rupa, Leela. Mm. The holy name will eventually lead and reveal all those.
All these all other things. Yes. Yes.
Maharaj, the one part you mentioned that in the introduction is one aspect that relates the words of the book to the subject matter. Mm-hmm. Is that part of the Mangalachara?
Yeah, it does that. But you also have to make sure the writing style of stuff is, it actually does that. But we're saying we see in the scriptures written by the sages, you know, and what's compiled by Vyasadeva, then you don't have to worry about that. But the Mangalachara will define that so that you know what to look for. You know, and to see more details specific of that, then that's that than the Tatparyalingas. Right? You know, what's at the beginning, what's at the end, what's emphasized, what's unique, what's repeated, like that. Glorified.
Yeah, thanks.
So then, yeah. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Sarva Bhakta Vrinda ki
Jai
Jai Nitai Govardhana ki Jai.